Okay, good morning, everyone. I want to welcome you to this week's insights into the weekly Parsha. And this week's Parsha, we have a double portion, Parsha's Tazria, Mitzora. It's also Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Iyar. And over the next 4 weeks, we're going to lay 7 Parshios. This week being a double Parsha, next week being a double Parsha. There'll be a break for Parsha's Emor. And then again, there will be a double Parsha. So over the next 4 weeks, there will be 7 Parshios, and this is an opportunity for us this morning to go through Parshas Tazria, Mitzora, to go through some very important principles, some very important ideas. Before we begin this year, before we begin this class, I would like to dedicate this learning this morning for the Refuah Shelema, for those around the world who are suffering because of the coronavirus. They should have a refuah shleimu mehera, and we should all experience Yeshua's Hashem keheref ayin. And the schus, and the merit of limud haTorah, so we should all only have good health and good things. Emir tzah Hashem. So at the end of the first of the 2 parshios this week that we will read, that we will learn, that we will lain at home, so the end of Parshas Tazria, so it deals with the tzaras, specifically to the spiritual blemish that appears on clothing. You know, there are different parts whereby the tzaras afflicts and affects. There's the tzaras that afflicts and affects the person, that afflicts and affects the individual, the body of the person. And there's the tzaras that afflicts and affects the bayis, the house. And there's the tzaras that afflicts and affects the clothing, the garment. And that's what's dealt with at the end of Parshas Tazria. It deals with the tzaras, the spiritual blemish that appears on the begodim, that appears on the clothing. When the Pasuk tells us in Perek Yud Gimel, in the 13th chapter, Pasuk Mem Zayin, verse number 47, Vabeged ki yebo neged tzaras, vabeged semer o beged pishtim, the garment that has a lesion of tzaras on a woolen garment or a linen garment. So what happens with this garment? We have to investigate this garment. We have to figure out this garment. What is its status? The Pasuk tells us, v'ra koines anega. So we take this garment with its lesion and we bring it to the Kohen. And here we have this word which has taken a tremendous amount of resonance and importance now in our lives. V'hiskir es hanega shivas yamin. V'hiskir means that it should be closed off, or it should be quarantined. The word quarantine and being in solitude and in isolation, of course, is something that we're all dealing with in real time in a very meaningful way, in a very profound way. So no different from what we're experiencing now. There's a sense of hiskir, there's a sense of quarantining. But in this case, and in this context, the quarantining that's taking place is with the beged, is with the garment. This article, this beged, has a lesion on it. We're not sure what that means. So what we do is we take it to the Kohen, we take it to the priest, and we ascertain, noting that this is a spiritual blemish. There's something that's deep, there's something that's meaningful. What does it mean? So the Kohen, he quarantines this beged for Shivas Yamin. What happens? V'ras ha-nega b'yom ha-shvi'i. He then looks at the garment on the 7th day, and he looks to see what the status of this garment is. If, in fact, the beged has this lesion that has spread, if there is a green-like or red-like coloration to this lesion and it's spread, whether it's on leather, whether it's on any type of material like this, so it's malignant of a tzaras and it's unclean, v'sarav es ha-beged, and the beged, the garment, must be burned because it is mitame. So it has to be burned. So that's what happens when it's spread, when it's found to be malignant. But what happens, v'imra ha-kayin v'hine, he looks at the garment and he sees not that it's spread, but rather that it's not spread. So now he's not sure what the story, what's going to be. It's pending. So then the Kohen puts in another prescription. He orders something else. Posek nun dalad, v'tziva ha-kohen v'chibsu es asher bo ha-noga v'skiro shivas yomim shenis. So the Kohen puts another order. What does he order? That they're going to wash the lesion that's on the garment, and he should quarantine it again for an additional 7 days. for another 7 days. And then there's going to be another evaluation. There's going to be another determining what's the status of this beged. What's the status of this garment? So that's where things get very interesting. And very importantly, do we pay our attention to this pasuk Nun Hey, verse number 55, chapter 13, Parshas Tazria. So the pasuk says, V'ra'a kain acharei hukabes es hanega. The Kohen then is going to look at the lesion now after these 7 days, and now after it's been washed, and see what? He's going to see, v'hine, he realized, no ne'pach ha-nego es eino. He realizes that the nego, that the lesion has not changed, but he realizes that it has not spread. But we see that it has not changed in its appearance. Lo'hofach es ha-nego es eino. It has not changed its appearance. It has not spread, that's true, but nonetheless, it's mitame. So the din is, the pasuk says, hu ba'esh tisrafenu. He has to burn the garment nonetheless. Why? Lo'hofach es ha-nego es eino. Because of the fact that it has not changed its appearance. If it would have changed its appearance, in addition to the fact that it didn't spread, so then it's good to go. Then it would be clean. Then it would be fine. But that's not what the situation is. Here, it's true that it hasn't spread. But there's something else. Is that the color hasn't changed. And the fact is, anega as eino, it has not changed its eino. It hasn't changed its coloration. So that's reason for it to be tisrafenu ba'esh. It has to be then burned in the fire. Now, what's interesting is that this pasuk uses a very interesting language. You know, typically we think about the word as eino. How do you spell the word eino? Eino, which connotes that it's not, should be spelled with an aleph. However, the pasuk uses a different language, vihine lohofach hanego es eino, which is spelled with an ayin. Eino. What is ayin with eino with an ayin and eino with an aleph, the difference? It means that specifically and literally means that the appearance of the negat hasn't changed. As Rashi tells very simply, lo hafach ha-nega es eino, lo hocha mimariso, that the color hasn't changed. It's just telling a simple poshit pshat, explanation of what the verse means, that the coloration hasn't changed, as we've been saying. But actually, because of the fact that we note the difference between how it's spelled, the difference between with an aleph or with an ayin, we realize actually that this is an idiomatic expression. That the word eino literally means with an ayin, it means an eye. The ayin. The eino. It's an expression that now literally means that the blemish on this garment has not changed its eye. It doesn't mean necessarily that it doesn't change, that eino, that it didn't change. But literally, if we take the word to mean eino with the ayin, that it means the eye. So what it means is that the blemish, the nega that's on the garment, that's on the beged, it hasn't changed its eye. So the question is, what does that mean? What's the lesson? What's the limud? What's the Torah? What's the inspiration that we draw from this very specific usage of the letter with the ayin that changes almost what seems to be the meaning of the word, that it's not with an aleph, but rather with an ayin? What does it mean? So the Gemara Maseches Erechin famously teaches us that we know that there are a number of averos, that there are a number of sins that can cause tsaras, that cause this affliction. You know, many define this word tsaras as leprosy, which of course we know isn't correct. But the Gemara famously says that there are a number of averos, a number of sins that can cause tsaras. And the most commonly known avera is the avera of lashon hara, of speaking ill, of demoralizing in the speech and the tongue for which we talk about others. We're going to get into that a little bit later. And what that means specifically to how we can apply this explanation and understanding of the difference between the aleph and the ayin. So we understand that it primarily, most commonly, is understood to mean that it's talking about the sin, the issa, the prohibition of lashon hara. However, the Gemara in Maseches Erechin also says that the einish, that the punishment of tsaras also comes al tsaras ha'ayin. Now the question is, what's al tsaras ha'ayin? What does that mean? So tsaras ha'ayin literally means the narrowness of the eye. But it doesn't only mean that a person who is tight-fisted, Or it doesn't mean only that a person is very cheap or perhaps stingy. A tsar ayin is a person who never sees the toiv, who never sees the good side of anything, who always sees the negative, always sees the rishus, the evil, all that which is lacking, all which is missing. It's the proverbial the glass that is half empty that's not half full. It is the opposite of the generosity of spirit. It's the opposite of seeing things in the positivity which they're meant to be seen. It's a stinginess regarding not only money, dine mamnis, not only regarding people, which is what we're going to get to when we talk about the dinim of Lashon Hara as it applies here, but also regarding viewing life in general. Like, how do you see things in the world? With positivity, the silver lining, the things that are good. What is my disposition to see things? How is it that I view things? Things that are, and the idea of a tsar ayin is an individual, is a person who sees things in a negativity. With this eye, which is always punitive. That which was a certain sense of stinginess. Something that is lacking in all areas of a person's life. And so therefore what we understand is that a tsar ayin is a person who doesn't like to see other people's successes. The only success that a person is interested in is his own success. It doesn't even matter sometimes, even if I don't have success, but as long as you don't have success, so then obviously what we understand is this is part of what the definition of a tsar ayin is. I don't want you to have success. Only I'm interested in my own success. And I'm never going to be satisfied as long as you have, or anybody has. I'm always with a disposition of negativity. And so therefore we understand is if a tsaras ha'ayin causes tsaras, then the tikkun, then the remedy, then the fixing of this, the correction that causes that tsaras to go away, is the person having this need to do tshuva, and switching from being a tsar ayin to being a toiv ayin. This transcendence that a person goes from seeing things in the negative way, with always a disposition of ra, of evil, and now to learn how to see things positive, to look for the positivity, to look for the good, to perceive the good. So much of that good at times is overlooked. So much of that time is not perceived, and sometimes what we're realizing now more than ever before is we're in a status of pause, in a place of stopping. We're realizing that there's so much good around us in our lives that maybe we didn't even realize. Some of us have gone on walks, we perceive nature. Some of us have spent more time with our children, our spouses, our families. We perceive, like, you know, spending time with them is paramount, it's significant. There's so much tov, there's so much good, there's so much responsibility, there's so many obligations, there's so many things that drag us down that perhaps we fail to see them as opportunities. Perhaps we see them sometimes more as things that are heavy and weighty. So that's what a person has to do. To change the concept of the tikkun of tsaras ha'ayin, of seeing things always in this negative sense, the tikkun of that is to transition from being a tsar ayin to being a toiv ayin. And that means, like the Mishnah in Perkei Avos, you know, we're learning Perkei Avos between Pesach and Shavuos, reminding us that we have two different paradigmatic types of personalities for whom we're supposed to perhaps consider. This means that a person is like of the Talmidim of Bilam HaRasha, who Chazal tell us has the traits of Tsaras HaAyin, the traits of stinginess of spirit. A person has to change from the students of like the Talmidei Bilam HaRasha to be like the Talmidei of Avram Avinu. Because to be a Toiv Ayin is one who is with a good eye, perceives, looks for, desires to see the goodness in everybody and in everything. So if the Tsaras stays the same, and if the tsaras does not get better, so the beged, the garment is mitame, it's unclean, and the person does not have a tikkun for his avera. A person does not have a remedy for his sin. The way a person's able to see the remedy of the sin to go away is assuming that a person realizes that the beged is not only that it doesn't spread, but the coloration changes. There's an eno. There's an ayin. There's the purpose for which a person's eye and perspective is meant to be refocused. And actually, in the commentary, as is quoted by the Chidush Arim, he says that what we understand from this is that there's a double meaning to this pasuk. The first is Vihine lehofach hanega es eno. It did not change its appearance. It didn't change its color literally, but lehofach hanega es eno. His eye didn't change. So in order to do tshuva, the person has to change his ayin. This is a call for us to change our ayin, to change our eye, to change our perspective, to change our outlook, to readjust, to refocus the optics that demand of us to see things differently, perhaps, than we've seen, and that we failed to perceive previously. A person has to change from being a tzar ayin and to have the opportunity to become a tov ayin. And so therefore what this pasuk is hinting to, v'hine le'hofach haneges eino, it means that his ayin didn't change. He's the same stinginess, he's the same unwillingness, the same stubbornness to share and to be generous. And so therefore in this case, the eino does not merely mean the appearance that didn't change, but that the ayin didn't change. The tsaris ayin, that the avera that brought on this terrible punishment, it means that it's still in place. It means that it's still there. Means that it's still present. So the Chiddushei Arim continues by sharing in his commentary the famous Chassidish of Vart, that the word nega, as perhaps many of you are familiar, is really the same as the word oneg. What's the difference between the word oneg, the word for pleasure, and the word nega, the word for affliction, the word that connotes tsaras in the Hebrew lettering? So of course we know that the only difference is the placement of the letter ayin, where the ayin goes. Where does the ayin sit in the word? The nun and the gimel are in the same places. They don't move. The only difference is whether the ayin is at the beginning or whether the ayin is at the end of the word. That's the difference. It's all a function of where the ayin goes. You have the ability to make something different by just the way you perceive something. It's like Rabbi Pesach Kron likes to famously say, the difference between united and untied is the difference of where you put the eye. If you put the eye in the right spot, you can unite a lot of things. You can unite everybody. United with where I put the eye. If I put the eye in the wrong spot, I'm selfish, I'm stingy, I'm stubborn, so I untie everything. The difference between united and untied is where I put the eye. So the difference between a person having tsaras, a nega, and the person having an einig and pleasure, it all depends likewise on the placement of the ayin. And that's this person's problem in the pasuk. That's the problem that ultimately renders this mitame, renders this garment impure, that renders this garment the need to be burned. It's invalid. It's not able to be used. Why? Because the problem's with his ayin. It's the problem that he has with his eye. His problem is with his ayin, it's his perspective, it's his approach to life. He doesn't have the right perspective. The fact that it didn't spread, that's one thing. Okay, it didn't spread. But what's the perspective? What happens if it does spread? What happens if you have an ayin? What happens if you have a virus that spreads? What happens if it's a message to a person, to a people, to a world? It spreads, it calls us and stops us in our tracks. And the problem with this person in this pasuk is his ayin, so that his tikkun as of haifach hanegas eino, he has to change his ayin. He has to take the ayin from the word nega, and he has to move the ayin to make it an oineg. It's literally a personality perspective shift that changes everything. It changes the tsar, the tsaras, the tsaras, to the pleasure, to the oneg, to the delight. The pleasure that a person has, all it takes is you take the ayin and you move it to a different part of the word. And now with that perspective, you've changed literally everything. The difference between united and untied. One letter, one word, one perspective. However, if a person is so stingy, if a person is so stuck and mired in their ways, and a person can't be gracious, and a person can't see the goodness and the good side of life, then a person remains a mitzora, then a person remains in this status. And hine lehafach haneges einu, the nega remains, and he has to burn that garment because he's incapable of changing his ayin. Unfortunately, it's sad. Some people think that they're incapable of changing their ayin. What's so important is that a person has to always live with the spirit that I can always change my status. I can always change my narrative. I can always change my station stop. I can always change my perspective. If a person lives with a life that means that they feel that they're constantly incapable of changing your perspective. You're stuck. It's mavis. It's death. It's being burned. It's painful. It's unhappy. It's living a life constantly seeing, it's not just in the proverbial sense of the glass half empty. Everything in your life, you're a brachan, a mensch, you're a person who's sad, you're despondent, you're unpleasant to be around, you're unloving, you're not loving of people. You find yourself constantly seeing things not in their best way. Are there challenges? Is it a tremendous effort for us to challenge our resolve to look through difficult circumstances, unsettling circumstances? No doubt. But a person has an obligation, a mandate with grit and perseverance and passion to find the fortitude to have the changing perspective that changes literally everything. Because I think what we understand from here, that perspective is literally everything. You know, there are two neuroscientists that wrote a book. And the name of these two neuroscientists, one's name is Andrew Newberg, and the other is a fellow by the name of Professor Mark Robert Waldman. And they actually argue in their book, Words Can Change Your Brain, that there's a neuron, a firing of that which gets wired, but there's a firing of the things that a person feels or thinks about that influences their brain. They say, and I quote the following from their book, a single word, imagine that, a single word has the power to influence the expression of genes that regulate physical and emotional stress. A single word. If you're besimcha, if you have oneg, if you can find positivity, if you can find optimism and goodness, if you can look for the silver lining and see that, it's not that it's just like a good way to live your life. It influences the expression of the genes that regulate physical and emotional stress. You're feeling stressed out? You're feeling physically lost and despondent? Maybe what needs to happen, as the tsaras was a spiritual blemish that was manifest in a physical way, maybe what needs to happen is that a person needs to realign, readjust, recalculate, recompute literally everything as it relates to how a person thinks about even a single word. How is it that I think about even a single word? We've spoken so much about a single deed, one act of chesed, picking up the phone, making a phone call, sending a text, a WhatsApp, an email, one deed. It's transformative. It's life-changing for yourself, for another person. But even for yourself, the changing in the mental, the neuroplasticity of a person using their mind to manipulate the difference even between the concept of the difference of a nega and an oneg. And I think that while there are certainly so many famous people that lived that and breathed that, I think it goes without saying that famously the Lubavitcher Rebbe was one who saw a tremendous amount of importance in the psychological impact of words, of the words that were spoken. He felt that the way to label the way a label or a concept was framed, even linguistically and mostly linguistically, was not only relevant intellectually, but likewise as these scientists taught, but also has tremendous relevance in shaping a person's identity and outlook. Imagine your identity, not just the essence of your physical and emotional stress. Here's a secret. You're feeling stressful? Let's maybe change our outlook, change our perspective. But here, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in the linguistic, just using certain words shapes a person's identity. Like, what kind of person are you? We know we size up people in a flash. And part of the reason why we size up a person in a flash is because of the way their output. What's their output? The way they look, the way they talk about people, the way they talk about things, their outlook, their identity. The Rebbe consistently sought to avoid words or phrases that expressed attitudes of contempt, attitudes of derision or negative judgment. And even more strikingly, so famously, the Lubavitcher Rebbe would actively rephrase certain common words and colloquial phrases that many of us kind of speak or write without even a second thought. So for example, famously, I'm sure many of you have heard, it's written in many of his books that were written about him rather, he disliked the word deadline with its connotation to death. And so therefore he would refer rather to the due date. What's a due date? It's a connotation of birth. He wouldn't call a spiritual getaway a retreat, because retreat, it connotes regression. It connotes a certain surrender. In the Rebbe's playbook, so there was only one direction. And that direction was onward, that direction was upward. He objected very strongly, for example, to the Israeli phrase for hospital, Beit Cholim, which means the house of the sick. Why was a hospital not called a Beit Refuah? Why wasn't it called a house of healing? Actually, in a letter that he famously penned, he wrote to Professor Mordechai Shani, the director of the Sheba Medical Center, in February of 1977, corresponding to the third day of Adar in the year 5737, he wrote the following: even though this would seem to represent only a semantic change, the term Beit Refuah brings encouragement to the sick. It represents more accurately the goal of the institution. What's the purpose of this hospital? Which is to bring about a complete healing. And so therefore, why call it by a word that does not suit its intentions? By changing the way we refer to hospitals, the Rebbe felt that we would strengthen the sanctity and sanctify health rather than prioritize illness, just in the difference of the word between Beit Cholim and Beit Refuah. Imagine if we made that change. What an unbelievable outlook. It changes literally the way you look at institutions. It changes the way you look at yourself. There was once a man who wrote a letter to the Lubavitcher Rebbe who described himself as a small Jew. So the Rebbe wrote back in the correspondence that there is no such thing in this world as a small Jew. And in this letter, which you can Google, you can find, he reminded that the neshama, that the soul of every single Jew, is a cheluk of Elokim Mimal. It's a cheluk of Hashem. It's a portion, it's a part of the Ribono Shel Olam himself. And so therefore, a Jew, a Yid, can never underestimate his or her tremendous potential. No such thing as a small Jew. If you see yourself as a small Jew, then you are, and you feel like a small Jew, but you're not a small Jew. So this is true about how you define your physical well-being, your stress level, your spiritual well-being. This is true how you identify yourself specifically to how you interact with other people, how you call institutions. What person are you, and how do people see you and know you? But this is also, while it's true of how it is that we see ourselves in institutions, and how we define ourselves. But this is, of course, also true how we see others as well. And maybe this is why Lashon Hara is such a serious chemer hachet. It's such a serious sin. It's such a serious avlo. Because famously, the Gemara in the Jerusalem Talmud in the Yerushalmi in Peah Aleph tells us that, you know, we're familiar of the three cardinal averos, the three cardinal sins that a person is obligated to surrender their own life rather than to commit. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichus Damim. But the Gemara in the Yerushalmi tells us that actually there's a fourth. But it's not just that there's a fourth that's equal to the three. There's a fourth that's actually Keneged Kulam. What does the Yerushalmi say? The Yerushalmi says, Arba Dvarim Shehen Nifrayin Min Ha'odam Ba'olam Hazeh V'Hakeren Kayemis Lo Lilam Haba V'Elohein. There are four transgressions for which a person pays in this world, but not only in this world, but also pays obviously in the next world as well. What are they? And that's three. But what's the fourth? V'lashon hara keneged kulan. You see, it doesn't just simply mention lashon hara as the fourth. It'd be a different opinion. There's three, and there's one who says there's four. There's four, but it's keneged kulan. It is equivalent to the severity of them all. Which means, I would argue, as the Yerushalmi does, that it's even greater than them. It's not just, there's three, but there's one. It's oil al gabehen. It's even greater than even the three. And the one that's oil al gabehen is lashon hara. It's keneged kulan. It is equivocated to literally all of them. That's why there's such a chaymer davar. And as the Gemara in Erchin again says, the Gemara says that the Ribbono Shalom cannot exist in the same world Kaviyach with a person who speaks Lashon Hara. What an unbelievable lesson. You know, today, there's all these mandates and best protective practices for a person not to leave your house without wearing a mask. Now, obviously, there's this physical worry of transmitting the contagious, you know, dreadful virus. But maybe, like, on a metaphysical sense, there's a concept of, like guard your mouth a little bit. Be careful with what's going out of your mouth. Be careful with the output. We're so flippant with what we say about people and about things, about institutions, about movements, about people's religion. about people's politics. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's not frightening that the mandate is you're not going to be able to leave your house, and you don't leave your house, and you don't feel safe unless you have a mask. And some people are wearing two masks and three masks if you're in a hot zone. You're going to be, why? Because you got to like really, really, really button it up. Really, really, really be careful. The Ribbono Shel Olam cannot exist in the world with a person who speaks Lashon Hara, as the Gemara says, call him a Saper Lashon Hara, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara in Erchin, that one who speaks Lashon Hara, so says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ein Ani V'Yicholin Lador Ba'olam. He and I cannot coexist in the same world. Now, if there's going to be a match between two, the Ribbono Shel Olam and an Adam, so the Adam is not going to make it. The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to exist. He was, he is, and will be. So if it means that the two of us cannot exist, and you're a Baal Lashon Hara, so the Baal Lashon Hara, he's not going to exist in the world, and that's why it's such a chaymer, it's so significant. Not just the outlook and the definition of the constitution of he who I am, but it's also an outlook of how I see myself, but it's an outlook of how I see other people. Why it's so serious, why it's so detrimental. But I want to share with you what I think is this outlook with regard specifically to others, and why the Chaimer of Lashon Hara is so, so powerful and so impactful. We'd be so careful, and maybe when we put the masks around our ears and upon our mouths, maybe even spiritually we can hold ourselves back and consider these concepts, consider this idea. Because I want to share with you perhaps what I think is a fascinating insight as to why. Why is speaking Lashon Hara about a person so bad? Why is it so terrible? Why is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam cannot live or exist in the world with you? Why is it that it's so abrasive? It's so abhorrent? So listen to this. In the Sefer Midos HaEmuna by Rabbi Menachem Schlanger, he explains the following. The text is so powerful and the lesson is so profound. He says the following. He says, Kalaymar, Ilomo shel ba'al Lashon Hara, you know what that means? The reason why the Gemara says that the Ribbono Shel Olam cannot dwell in the same world with a Baal HaMesaper Lashon Hara is because the world of the speaker of Lashon Hara, his world, his existence, his mahus, is a direct contradiction to the world that the Ribbono Shel Olam created. Hashem creates a world, and your existence is a living contradiction to the creation of the world the way the Ribbono Shel Olam created. What does that mean? Very powerful statement. Your living existence is a contradiction. Nobody wants to live with contradictions. But certainly nobody wants to live with contradictions if your contradictions are against the Tachlis HaBriya, the purpose for which the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. He explains very powerfully. What does that mean? Vabior, the explanation is, Me'ikr mohus ha'olam she'ein hu shalom mitchiloso el yesh bo chesreinois. It's obvious that the world is imperfect and has deficiencies. I think that we can't perhaps even imagine that now more than ever, better than the circumstance for which we find ourselves. But that's all done on purpose. It's not done by chance. It's not without reason. You know why the world was created with deficiencies, imperfections? It's not that man has the koyach, the ability to change the creation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yes, there's something called Bechiras Chavshis, this free will, and a person using their free will can exercise good or ra, toiv or ra, good or evil. But there's something else, there's a tachlis, there's a purpose for which the world was created with imperfections and deficiencies. Why? Because the way of the Ribbono Shel Olam to guide the world is to lead us to ultimate shleimus, to ultimate perfection. The imperfections that exist in the world, if considered with the right perspective, are meant for us to bring shleimus to the world, perfection to the world. That's the reason why the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world with imperfections. Brenefoshes, rabos, v'chesronon. The after blessing, for example, when you drink a cup of water, you have a cup of coffee, you have some scrambled eggs, brenefoshes, rabos, v'chesronon. The world was created as such. That the purpose of the world and for us to exist in the world is to bring shleimus, to bring tikkun, to bring remedy, to bring completion and wholeness and wholesomeness. And that wholesomeness that's brought as a result of us realizing that's the purpose of creation. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam did on purpose. This applies to the whole world. But this also applies, you should know, to the life of a person. Every person, the chol echod ve'echod yesh pigamim v'chesroinos. There isn't one person on this planet that doesn't have chesroinos and pigamos, doesn't have lackings and deficiencies, inadequacies and imperfections. We all do. Everybody does. But here's the problem. We fail to look at in the mirror to look at our own inadequacies. We do a very good job of looking at other people and pointing out their inadequacies. You're too fast, you're too slow, you're too oriented this way, oriented that way, your hashkafa is this, your hashkafa is that, you're this, you're that, you're otherwise. I see your imperfections. My imperfections? I don't see them. Because echod ve'echod, every single person has imperfections. Ach Hashem Yisbarach Barachamav. You should know that the Ribbono Shel Olam, with His mercy, with His compassion, with His mercy of Rachamav Raya Le'ikar Es HaTov Sheba Adam, that the Ribbono Shel Olam sees the good in a person. With His mercy, He overlooks the imperfections. He overlooks the inadequacies. He's the paradigmatic Mavir Al Midosav, overlooks the iniquities of a person. We all have imperfections. We all do things that we shouldn't do. You know who overlooks those inadequacies? The Ribbono Shel Olam. You know why? Because He created the world that way, and He created Adam that way. And then with His mercy, Roe Le'ikr Es HaTov Sheba Adam. He looks at the Ikr, the essence, the main of that person, and the main of that person is good. Messiah B'yadu L'Sakin Chesron Hesov L'Gia B'Tachlisoi. And you know what happens? Is with this mercy, He assists that person to reach his own personal perfection. It provides the way that we're able to perfect ourselves, to perfect our imperfections, to perfect the things where we're lacking. That's an amazing chesed. We spend our lives working on the things that we're not so good at. You know, we tend to think about focusing our attention only on the things we're good at. Sure, we focus our attention on things we're good at mostly, primarily. But maybe that's wrong. Maybe we have an obligation, and certainly we do spiritually, to focus on the things that we're lacking. I could be a better davener. I could be a better learner. I could be a better bal chesed. I could be a better nisei ba'ol chaveru, feel the yoke of the burden of the person who's suffering with pain and hardship and struggle. I'm lacking. And what I'm lacking, nobody knows what I'm lacking better than I know what I'm lacking. And if I know what I'm lacking, I devote my life's energies to being misakin, to remedying, to fixing what it is that I'm lacking. And you know who gave us the koyach, the strength to do that? The Ribbono Shel Olam. You know who called the world to pause, to stop, to watch what you touch with gloves, and to watch what you put on your mouth with a mask? The Ribbono Shel Olam, kindelach, my world with imperfections, perfect your world, perfect my world. Make it beautiful. Careful with what you touch. Careful with what you look at. Careful with what you say. Perfect your world. Perfect my world. And this brings the Tachlis HaAdam, the purpose for which we were and are created, to bring perfection. It's so powerful. So what does that have to do with speaking Lashon Hara about somebody else? He explains the following. He says, with this perspective, there is no place for categorizing someone as lacking. There's no place for categorizing somebody as lacking. There is no business that we have to say what your lackings are, what your deficiencies are. You daven too fast, you daven too slow. You have this orientation for this or this orientation for that. It's not your place. You have no right to do that. It's not right. You have no place. You have no authority, no jurisdiction to point out the inadequacies. Why? Because He is, after all, on His way to perfection. As you're inadequate on your way to perfection, so he or she is likewise on the way to perfection. The habitual speaker of Lashon Hara emphasizes the negative aspects of others, and in so doing, he gives these weaknesses reality. And he gives these weaknesses permanence. He makes these inadequacies the definition of that person. Here, I want to tell you a little Lashon Hara about that person. You know why? Because he or she, their business, their family, their orientation, their philosophy, their theology, their hashkafa, that is what defines them, their inadequacies as I perceive them. Who are you, slicha aduni? Mi ata bichlal? Who are you to determine, to ascertain, to judge another person's status, their gains or their limitations? Who are you? Who are we to say that? Because what happens when you emphasize the weaknesses of a person, you give that weakness a reality, you give that weakness a permanence. By doing so, he removes himself from the world that God has created. God doesn't want you in that world. He doesn't want you, doesn't need you. You are this antithesis. You are this negativity that exists as this populace of someone or something that is everything anti-negative, everything that the Ribbono Shel Olam expects for us in our creation. He doesn't want you here. He can't live with you. He can't have you here. Because that's not the purpose of the world. That's not the purpose of man. And you're going to be that presence that's going to, with your Lashon Hara, with your speaking negatively of somebody, you're going to be that person that derides a person, that brings negativity to that person, that now calls into question the Brias HaOlam, the creation of the world? How dare you? And therefore, you are not even meant and able to live and coexist with me, says the Gemara in Erechin. And so therefore you remove yourself from this world, a world that is completely directed for moving forward towards perfection. That is the purpose of this world. We don't look at this world as half empty. We look at this world as abundant opportunity. Not limitations, but limitless. Incredible, limitless opportunity. And even with isolation and a changed reality, there's so many opportunities to grow, to be better, to see the positivity, to look forward to perfection. There is a tikkun ha'olam, there's a tikkun ha'adam. It's all a function of your perspective. Could you imagine that there might even come a day where we're going to reflect back on this coronavirus era, and we might look back and say, you know, during those days, I found the best version of myself. Klal Yisrael, the world became so spectacular. They became united. They became less judgmental. They became sensitive and empathetic. They united in portals of virtual learning of an extraordinary level of consequence. They're coming together in droves and numbers to be inspired, to be careful what they say, to be more careful with davening, to be more careful with spending time with your families, to be more careful with trying to search and find what is your tachlis hachaim, the purpose of your existence on this world and in this life. Wow. What if it is that the coronavirus era is the greatest gift and the greatest reminder that the world that we live in, it's not imperfect. It's meant for us to be able to find that perfection. Was it created with imperfections, but not in its terminal sense? It was created with those intentional imperfections for us to find shlemus, for us to find perfection. And that can only happen in this Olam HaTachton, on this downstairs world. Only in the Olam HaZeh, with the extraordinary amount of opportunities that we have before us, we're not limited. We live with the perception that it's limitless. It's without end. It's without opportunity. There are opportunities. It's not without, no opportunity. There's opportunities for everything. And so therefore, that's why speaking Lashon Hara is such a chaymer. It's keneged kulan. It's more and more powerful and more demonstrative than even all of the three Gimel cardinals. Why? Because it's ma'itzias ha'adam min ha'olam. It takes a person out of this world. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I can't have you in this world. Your definition, your presence, is the antithesis of the purpose of creation. It's the antithesis of your own personal creation. And that we can't have. And therefore, you're speaking bad about somebody or something. So you are denying, by emphasizing the weakness, by emphasizing the inadequacies, you're making those weaknesses a reality and you're making them permanent. That's how we think of that person. Here's a good tip. The Sfasemis famously says, on the mission, it says, Hevidanis kol ha'adam l'chavschus. You know, the mandate to judge everybody favorably, kol, the word kol is judge everybody favorably, says the Sfasemis, that the word kol doesn't necessarily mean to judge everybody favorably in the larger macro kind of concept, which of course it does. Ultimately, we have to judge everybody favorably, but he says, if you judge the kol ha'adam, then you come to the chavschus, which is if you judge the whole of the person, you're having a hard time dealing with somebody who's hard. They're difficult. They're annoying. They're a nuisance. They present themselves as difficult. You know what you should do? Stop in your tracks and take a moment and reflect. Judge the whole of the person. are they all bad? If you think about the all of the person, okay, so maybe 7 out of 10 is good, 3 out of 10 is bad, 70%. So 30% of that person is bad. They're rotten in this area, they're rotten in that area. Now, I don't know if 30% is even, I mean, that's maybe even so high. Maybe it's not even 30%. But let's just say it's 30%. If you got a 70, you'd get a passing grade. If you can give somebody a 7 out of 10, if somebody can give you a 7 out of 10, wouldn't you be happy? You'd want to get an 8 or a 9 or a 10. You know, that reminds us, of course, you know, we're not driving in Ubers or taking rides. But, you know, what's very, very sobering is, you know, when you finish the Uber ride, you got to give a rating of the Uber driver. But what many of us don't remember is that the Uber driver gives us a rating as well. You ever see your rating? You ever see your rating? So what would happen if you saw your rating wasn't the 5 stars? That's happened to me, and I know it's happened to a number of my colleagues. What happens if you haven't, you don't see that you got 5 stars? Like, well, I don't get 5 stars. What did I do? I was rude. I was obnoxious. I'm a good guy. I was learning. I was making a phone call. I was doing something meaningful. I was maybe even doing a chesed. I was learning the Daf Yomi. I didn't get a 5. This guy, what does he know? Answer is, I didn't get a 5. It hurts. It stings. But at the end of the day, 4.87 is still better than nothing. It's actually a very high score. It's not the best, and you can achieve and aspire for greater heights and a better score. But imagine if you have Adonis Kol Ha'adam L'Chavzchus, if you judge the whole of the person, so you'll judge the whole of the person, so you'll probably come to a high percentage, and that'll lead you to be able to judge that person favorably. After all, come on, it's 9 out of 10. So 10% is bad. 1 out of 10 is bad. Okay, 1, I can live with 1 out of 10. By the way, you don't have 1 out of 10 that's bad. You don't have 2 out of 10 is bad. You don't have 3 out of 10 that's bad. We have sometimes worse. And we're so quick to judge others. We have to learn to be mavir al midosav, as the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, let's be like the Ribono Shel Olam. Let's be like the Almighty. As he is mavir al midosav, as he looks to overlook the imperfections, so then we likewise have to also overlook the imperfections. There are no, everybody has their own perfections. Everybody knows their own imperfections. What do I have to tell you about your imperfections that you already don't know? It's wrong. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. And friends, it's all in our hands. It's all up to us. So I just want to end this talk this morning by just sharing with you a very powerful story illustrating the power of individual choices. And the individual choices that we have as relates to things that we say, the things that we think about, how we define ourselves and our families and other people, it literally resonates so deeply and so profoundly. So let me share with you the following story. So there was once a grand Rebbe, Chassidish Rebbe, who had a special power. What was his special power? Special power is that he could answer any question that was asked of him. Any question that was ever asked, he had an answer for it. And there were people who came from far and wide who would gather to ask. They'd come to the court of the Rebbe, and the Rebbe never, ever left his questioners disappointed. There was a man who arrived in the shtetl, he arrived in the city, and he heard of the Rebbe's supposed gift, and he was very skeptical, to say the least. Friday afternoon, as Shabbos was approaching, so the people of the town, they would gather in front of the Rebbe's house. As the gabbai, the rabbis, the Rebbe's organizer, he facilitated the question and answer process. People came, and they would line up to ask the Rebbe the question. So this shtetl guest, he was surprised as the Rebbe answered each person's question correctly, concisely, and with a tremendous amount of clarity. But he left the Rebbe's home more resolved than ever. You know, there's such a person. All he wants to do is undermine and undercut and prove somebody wrong. That's this guy. He took it upon himself to think of a question that would stump the Rebbe. All he wanted to do is, I'm going to stump the Rebbe. I'm going to prove that it's not right, that he's not correct, that he doesn't have the answer to every question. So Shabbos came and he went. And the weekday slowly passed as well. Nothing came. There was no question he could think of that he thought would be strong enough to stump the question, to stump the Rebbe. And sure enough, Shabbos had arrived yet again. And the townspeople started to gather in front of the Rebbe's home. The Rebbe will begin listening to the people's questions. Again, the Gabbai called out. And still the cynical guest had nothing. And suddenly, he had an idea. Suddenly, he had an incredible thought. The man ran through the crowds into the outskirts of the town where there was a meadow. There was a pasture. And in this meadow and in this pasture, there were dozens of butterflies that were frolicking there. They're flying here and flying there. If you've ever been to a butterfly world, you see, you can picture the scene. He leaped into the field. He caught a butterfly in his hands. And he held his hands ever so gently so the butterfly continued to flutter inside. He took that butterfly that was fluttering inside his closed hands and he bolted back into the heart of the town as he pushed through the crowds to make it to the head of the line with his hands cupped all the while. And he says to the Gabbai, I have a question for the Rebbe. He called out, barely containing his excitement. He was so happy that he is now what he perceives to be a question that's going to now stump the Rebbe. He goes to the Rebbe, says, Rebbe, Grand Rebbe, O Great One. He says, tell me, I have a butterfly in my hands. And he satiated the final words before he said them, tell me. He like paused for the drama. Is the butterfly that's in my hands, is it dead or is it alive? So the man sighed and he smiled and he looked at the Rebbe and he said, I finally did it. I finally stumped him. If the Rebbe says that he's dead, he's going to open his hands and he's going to let the butterfly fly free. And if the Rebbe says, I know that the butterfly is alive, then he's going to squash the butterfly. So suddenly and the butterfly is going to die. No more butterfly. And the Rebbe is going to be wrong. It would be a win-win situation for the cynical guest in the shtiebel who now all he wants to do is he wants to stump the Rebbe. So he says, tell me, Rebbe, is the butterfly alive or is the butterfly dead? Which one is it? So the Rebbe looked at the man for a minute and then he smiled back at him. He raised his hand and said, Hakol biyodecho. Everything and all is biyodecho. Everything is in your hands. It's all in your hands. Now this smirk quickly vanished from the cynic's face, and he realized the wisdom of the Rebbe and the greater lesson behind the words that the Rebbe told him. Indeed, the butterfly's life rested in his own very hands. It's true. But on a much deeper level, and this lesson that we're learning here together, there was a lot more at stake, because it was about his attitude, his approach, his tone. The whole enterprise of trying to outsmart the Rebbe in the first place, Hakol biyodecho, Hakol biyodcho, everything is in your hands, everything is in your hands. And though it might not always feel like we have a butterfly's life weighing in the mix, in the cusp of our hands, I think it's fair to say, and I hope that you all can appreciate this now more than ever before, that the choice is always before us. If not in action, then no doubt in perspective. It's all hakol biyodecha. It's all in your hands. It's all in our hands. How we make choices to look at things and to look at ourselves and to look at people. It was famously said by Sir Winston Churchill that a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity. An optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. We are going through a difficulty, no question about it. But let's look for the opportunities by regaining our perspective on life, on how we're meant to live our lives, and to find the greatest moments that are yet left for us to live now and in Emirat Hashem always. As Rav Kook once famously said, if you find yourself in a very dark place, a makom of choshech, don't waste your time cursing the darkness. Don't waste your time thinking about what's lacking. Just light a candle. Bring a flame. Bring some light. Bring some awe. Bring some perspective. Bring some purpose. Bring some passion. Bring some vigor. Have the energy to light your flame, to bring some light, to bring light to that darkness. That, my friends, is the Jewish way. Hakol biyadecha. It's all in our hands. Let us all desire now to choose wisely. I thank you all for tuning in today, and I invite you to join me again next week on Thursday morning for our insights into the weekly Parsha and for all of the other classes that we have in our online shul and portal of virtual learning. I'm so inspired by the many who tuned in, whether being on Facebook Live or on Zoom. Emir Tz Hashem, in the schus of Limud HaTorah, there should be refuah shalema u'mehera, and again, we should all experience Yeshua's Hashem, Keheref Ayin. Wishing everybody a wonderful and a blessed day.